I was thinking the other day, how many things have changed dramatically in just my lifetime? And I bet for most of you listening, you could think of some of the big changes you've seen as well.
This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman.
Sometimes some of the hardest things to fathom is how fast life can slip by. Over the past month, I've been thinking about, memories from 10 years ago, 20, 30, even 50 years ago, and a bit more. I turned 65 last year. I'll turn 66 in the middle of this coming month of October. And I'm looking back just in my 65 plus years. Things that have changed. Now, my memories of the 1950s are not that great because I was just, not even ready for kindergarten until 1959. But I do remember some things. I really do. If you could go back to, let's say, whatever year you came along. I came along in 54. So if I could go back to when I was born, 1954, would I do it? If you were born, let's say, in 1950 or maybe 1960 or 1970, if you could go back in time, would you actually consider doing it? And I have to stop and think. Back when I was born, there was no internet. There were no cell phones. And if you had a television set, a lot of people didn't. If you had one, it was simply black and white. Big cabinet, small screen. Some screens were only like 10 inches round back in those days. We lacked a lot of the modern conveniences we take for granted, like a microwave oven. But when you go back to that time, when you go back to, let's say, the year I was born, 1954, families still ate dinner together, neighbors knew and pretty much cared about one another. And being, if you live in this country, United States, it actually meant something. We like to think today we're more advanced than we were back then, but you know something? Our society is falling apart all around us in spite of all of our smartness and our technology. Could it be that there's some lessons to learn from way back, 50, 60, and even 70 years ago? Now, I will tell you, we all know if you study history, was the United States a perfect country? Far from it. Definitely was not a perfect nation under any stretch of the imagination. We still had civil rights to deal with, and in many ways we did, and in many ways we still are. But overall, it was a different world in spite of a few of our failings which needed to be addressed. There's never been a time in our history when everything was perfect. And like I say, let's go back to the 1950s for just a moment. In the 1950s, one of the more popular television programs was the Texaco Star Theater. The Lone Ranger and Hopalong Cassidy were some of the most popular shows that America either listened to on radio at one point or watched on television. But here today, a Netflix film called Cuties is so trashy, and it's actually so disgusting that four states have sent letters asking it to be removed because, honestly, it's fodder for those with criminal imaginations serving to normalize the view that that little children are nothing but sexual things. In the 1950s, television, this all the way into the 1960s, would never show husbands and wives in the same bed together. Yet, today, adult websites get more traffic than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined. Back in the 1950s, people would greet one another as they walked down a street. Today, we are often, and I find myself in this group too, because I'm so busy trying to get information. we're so enamored with our phones, and we don't want to be bothered with actual human contact. Look at young people today. They can sit together on a park bench, back when we don't have the coronavirus, or even at a picnic table, never talking to one another and using their thumbs to type messages and things to other people. You know, when I think about school. Now, I went to a parochial school, meaning a Christian school. And so discipline there was probably a little bit more strict. But even so, back in the 1950s, the biggest problems that teachers had in maintaining a classroom were people chewing gum and talking to each other, passing notes, you know. Today, kids are literally gunning down police officers in the streets. We've seen that in recent weeks in the protest. Back in the 1950s and even 1960s, I can remember this. I remember it like it was yesterday. People would generally make an effort to dress up and look nice whenever they would leave the house and go out in public, and that even included the grocery stores. Women would dress up. They even had gloves, those nice white gloves or whatever, and depending upon the weather, a nice jacket. And they would go shopping Monday through Friday for the most part, and they would be dressed nicely. Today, you go to some of the stores like Walmart, and you see people that dress like utter slobs. If you don't believe it, get on a computer one day and type in the word "people of Walmart," and you will see actual people make your head explode. When you look back in the 1950s and even into the 1960s and all the way into the early 1970s, typically a woman got married for the first time on average around age 20, and the first time for a man about 21 or 22. Today, that's moved to age 27 for women and men age 29. Now, we can argue which is good or which is bad. I think back in my day, we were far more equipped to handle the world as we exited high school and maybe college. We had a real education. We had been raised with real expectations, actually having jobs along with our schoolwork. We had to walk to school, ride a bike to school, or take a bus. We generally didn't have this. Have you ever seen this huge line of parents dropping their kids off at school so their little children don't have to deal with the real world? They get picked up. They get delivered. Cars get worn out. We're so sheltering at times that we don't let our children get immune to the things of the world. Back in the time that I was being raised, a lot of people would leave their homes and their vehicles unlocked because the crime rates were so low. I'm going to tell you a little story. I lived in a town back in the 1970s that was so safe to live in. I left my keys in the car so I wouldn't lose them. Never locked it. Had an emergency set in case somehow it did get locked. That's before little buttons and beepers and remote control entry. But I can remember those kind of days where you just never thought about it. I can remember back in this one small town, you could go past cars and see keys sitting in the ignition so they wouldn't lose the keys. I don't think I would do that today. We live in urban areas that are... people are deathly afraid of civil unrest that has erupted. And gun sales have soared to an all-time high to protect ourselves when back in my day, sometimes owning a gun for target practice and in case you ever really needed it was why you had one. Back when I came along, people actually attempted to be the parent to their children. Now think about that. Back when I came along in the 50s and 60s, parents actually attempted to be a parent to their child or children. Today, because of all the pressures we claim we have, we pump our kids full of mind-altering drugs, and we let our televisions and our video games raise our children. Think about that. And I've seen the results in my work in ministry. I've seen it over and over and over again. Kids don't want to behave correctly in school. You run them down. The school says, hey, go see this doctor. And the next thing you know, they're full of Ritalin and they're compliant. And it makes life easy for the teacher. It makes life easy at home for the parents that both work, that are so stressed out to pay all the bills for this big house they really don't need and the two new cars sitting out on the driveway they really don't need. And they don't spend any time with their children. Instead, Netflix and violent video games oftentimes what raise our kids. And we let it happen. We are more often than not forsaking our responsibility in raising our children. Mind-altering drugs, television and video games, and even now cell phones and chat rooms. In the 1950s, Baltimore was one of the most beautiful and prosperous cities in the entire planet. Places like Detroit, not far behind. Yet today, in 2020, Baltimore regularly sees headlines because of all the murders that are constantly occurring. And that's happening in many of our formerly once majestic cities here in the United States. The violence, the crime, the shootings, they literally boarded up buildings. It looks more like a war zone than a city in most places here today in the United States. When I came along, 78% of all households in the United States contained a married couple. Now that figure is below 50%. I mean, just in my lifetime, a husband, a wife, a family, what they call the nuclear family, was the norm. And now it's increasingly becoming the exception. When I came along, and I actually belong in this group, about 5% of all babies born in the United States were born to unmarried parents, an unwed mother. I am one of those that was born that way, and thankfully placed for adoption instead of being aborted. When people talk about pro-life to me, I have to remind them if abortion had been legalized just 19 years earlier, I'd be medical waste in a landfill instead of on this microphone today. So to me, when I deal with the life issue, it is an important one to me because I understand I am living proof of what abortion actually is, the taking of a human life. And when people cannot understand that simple concept of what life really is, what human life is, when you cannot understand that, how can you understand more complex issues when something that simple eludes you? Let me just stop for a moment here to remind you, you're listening to the program Truth to Ponder. That's Truth to Ponder. I'm your host, Bob Bierman. People have said you need to remind people of what they're listening to when they're tuning in on the radio. And you can find out about the program at truth2ponder.com. truth2ponder.com. Now, let's get back to what I was talking about as we compare years ago in one lifetime to where our world has come today. And here's something else that, from my ministry side, makes a lot of sense to me. In the 1950s, and I can remember well into the 1960s, new churches were regularly being opened and built as we grew as a nation. I'll tell you a little story. I can remember going to a church in Long Island, a big town now. It's in Nassau County. It's called Hicksville. You may have heard of it. Maybe you haven't. It is a large community now. It was a pretty good-sized community back then, next door to Levittown, which was built after the Second World War. And there was a church there that started out in the 1800s, and by the time we got there, they were having many services every Sunday to accommodate the number of people. They built a parochial school. That's where I went, to Trinity Lutheran School in Long Island, in Hicksville, from the kindergarten in through the eighth grade. I would have gone on to a Lutheran high school had it not been for the fact that my dad decided to move us to a small town way in upstate New York to get away from the city. And looking back now, I don't blame him at all. But we had literally hundreds of children in this small parochial school trying to fit classrooms anywhere you could to meet the baby boom rush that came through. There were multiple classes of my grade stuffed in this small building. Today, instead of having four or five services, depending, now they're down to one or two. The school has probably less than half of the number of students enrolled. Things have changed. And so we look now at all these churches that used to be opened up in the 1950s and 1960s. And even until recent times of the pandemic, you saw a few opening up. But really, the truth is, even before the pandemic, it was anticipated that every week, 50 to 100 churches were closing in the United States. That's like, in some years, they were figuring 5,000 churches would close. This is before the pandemic. Now, because of the pandemic, it's going to be a lot higher. Maybe one or two out of every five may be forced to shut their doors in the next 18 months. Texas, the mayor of Lubbock, Texas, said that opening a new Planned Parenthood clinic is just like starting a church nowadays. It shows where the values have shifted. Back when I came along, we had pretty high standards for our elected officials, and people actually did research the candidates before they cast a vote. Not long ago, New Hampshire, and I read this, just goes to show that nobody pays attention. They don't really care. You have this woman who considers herself a transsexual, satanic anarchist, decided to run as a Republican just for the fun of it, and now she's the nominee for sheriff for the November election. Here's something else. Back when I came along, when the weather was decent, or even sometimes when it wasn't, when I got home from school, what's one of the first things we did when we got home from school? Changed our school clothes, put on our play clothes, and headed outdoors. It could be the fall. It could be taking your sled out and playing with a toboggan or whatever the case may be in the dead of winter, ice skating. I was terrible at ice skating, but still. We went outside. We played in the fresh air, in the fall, in the winter, in the spring, in the summer. We spent a lot of time, unless it was a bad storm, we were outside. Today, many of our parks and playgrounds stay empty, and we wonder why we have the highest childhood obesity rate in the industrial world. Do you want to know why? For the parents that are both working their wonderful careers to pay for their McMansion and to pay for all the fun stuff they want, the toys, the big car and the SUV, your kids come home and they're parked in front of a telephone or a video game. They're not interacting like they used to with other people, and many become loners. I can remember front porches, especially when I moved south in 1973. They were kind of the community gathering place. People would regularly have their neighbors over for dinner. And people, I can remember this, if you drove, and you can still see some of the old timers doing it in the in this part of Georgia that we're in. They're sitting out there in the front porch and they wave at the cars that go by. But you know, the younger generation doesn't care about things like that much anymore. Today, in most communities, we don't even know who our neighbors are. And the average American watches about 5 hours plus of television every day, adult Americans, that is. And younger are tied to their umbilical cord telephone. Back in my younger days, we had words like knucklehead, moxie, and jalopy. Now, moxie was going out by the time I came along. It's a term my parents probably knew well from the 40s. Today, we're having to learn new kinds of words like people kind and social distancing, face covering. We are living in a truly different and scary age. You know, in the 1950s, the first credit card was issued in the United States. Americans now owe more than $940 billion on their credit cards. Do the math. That's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. Back when I came along, my father was able to hold a job and made an income that supported three kids, a wife, and a house, and a car, actually two cars, an older car and the one that he had to drive to work. Today we've had many that have lost their jobs due to the pandemic, filed for unemployment, and more than half of households in some of our largest cities are facing some serious financial problems. Back when I was a child, Americans believed that the free market should govern our economy. Today, most Americans seem to believe that government and the Federal Reserve must endlessly manage our economy for us. They're going to manage it into the ground. If you listen to the program last week on Thursday when I had my good friend Peter Ganz on board, he knows the economy, and he knows at some point the bubble is going to burst again. It always does, and unfortunately, most of us that are not the wealthy and have certain assets tucked away, we end up paying the price on every reset. We're going to be due for one soon. When I came along, the idea of socialist and communist was considered to be our greatest national enemy. I can remember, I was young, but I can remember it very well. The Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, communists putting interballistic rockets and missiles in Cuba, 90 miles away from Florida, that could reach Washington and New York. I mean, right there, they could do it. And I can remember people building fallout shelters, thinking we're on the verge of war because of the Soviet expansion. Today, you look at some of the politicians and certain parties, and you'll notice that they are now embracing the very things that could destroy us. Socialists and communists. When I came along, the concept of the United States Constitution was something that we learned, something that we read, something that we deeply studied, not just cherry-picked. When I went through the basics in junior high and then high school, we went through and understood the various amendments to the Constitution, how our government was designed with the three primary branches. And if you want to call the fourth estate or fifth estate, that was the media to kind of keep an eye on the other three. Today, anybody that says, like I am, a constitutionalist, by some people are considered a domestic threat. When I came along, the United States loaned more money to the rest of the world than anybody else, literally combined. Literally combined. You may not know this, but it was only a few years ago that England finally paid off their World War II debt for the money we lent them back in 1940. Yeah. It took until just now, 80 years, to pay back that debt. But now, the United States owes more money to the rest of the world than anybody else. We have debt to places like China. We have debts. We have debts all over the world. Our national debt reached the, ready for this now? When I was a kid, we had a national debt. And this was because of the Second World War, still trying to pay off some of our own debt that we had to our own people and many, you know, war bonds and everything else, and money borrowed from the bankers. Our debt reached $257 billion for the first time in our history. We actually had a big debt. Today, we added $864 billion to the national debt just in the month of June alone. In other words, we added over three times more to the national debt in 1 month than we did from the founding of this nation until the mid-1950s. And here's something that really concerns me. Back when I came along, most Americans were generally happy with their lives. But today that suicide rate is at an all-time high. And it's been rising every single year since about 2007, 2008. And I'm 100% certain with the current pandemic, that number has gone up even much more. We have seen so many technology advances in my lifetime. When I was probably 1 or 2 years of age, many people still listened to the radio for entertainment, not just music. We're talking like, you know, drama, comedy, like the TV shows were becoming in the 1950s. Probably when I was 2 years old, kids got home from school to listen to a 15-minute episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar on the radio 5 days a week. Kind of a five-day serial, episode 1 through 5. Radio was just beginning to make the transition from being theater of the mind to a, you know, like a music source, playing records, having a live local disc jockey. And TV was growing. TV only came along and signed on in 1948, not that many years before I was born. And the transition from radio to television took about 12, 13 years. Television sets back in the day, compared to the income for that little tiny 8 or 9 or 10-inch screen, literally a round 10-inch screen, the size of a plate, in a huge cabinet because of all the vacuum tubes that it took to make it operate. These TV sets were very expensive, and it took a long time before they made their way into every home, it seems, or most every home in the 1960s, and then color TV came along. I can remember that. NBC, the full color TV network. I'm sure many of you can remember it too. The standards of what were on TV are so different than what they are today. Today, any sin is celebrated on TV. We don't even pretend anymore. And I can remember when all that started. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. I want to remind you, this is Truth to Ponder, and I know this has been a long opening segment, but I just felt it was important to take the time to share this with you. This is Truth to Ponder. The website is truth2ponder.com. truth2ponder.com. Love to hear from you. If you want to use our physical mailing address, it is 21 Berkshire Lane, B-E-R-K-S-H-I-R-E Lane, and add this little thing afterward, number 263. We have a special kind of a mailbox system in our little community. 21 Berkshire Lane, number 263, in Sky Valley, two words, Sky Valley, Georgia, 30537, in the United States of America. That's 21 Berkshire Lane, number 263, in Sky Valley, Georgia, 30537. We'll be right back.
This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman. This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman.
And welcome back to the program, Truth to Ponder. I'm your host, Bob Bierman. So glad you're with me today. Want to give you that mailing address. A lot of people have said you don't give your address or website enough. We're listening on radio. And I know when you listen on shortwave, sometimes it can fade in and out a bit, and it's hard to stay with the entire hour. So real quick, before we get into this segment, let me share the address. You can write me at Truth to Ponder at 21 Berkshire Lane. That's 21 Berkshire, B-E-R-K-S-H-I-R-E Lane. And add number 263. That's our special box system up here in our little community. And that is Sky Valley. The state is Georgia. Zip code is 30537 in the United States. That is 21 Berkshire Lane, number 263, Sky Valley, Georgia, 30537. When I first started thinking about doing a program like this, Truth to Ponder, I debated what kind of a show it should be. I spent a lot of time in broadcasting, and I've had a chance to work in a couple of other fields. And toward the, when I got in my middle age period of time, I studied for and entered the ministry. So I've been around a lot of things, which, you know, people wonder, how have you had so many different careers? I didn't plan on it. It just worked that way. And I've met people that are like that. They just have jobs fall their direction. I had that happen to me a couple of times. Nothing wrong with it. I look back at the life that I've had. I never got wealthy, but I don't need to. I've gone through some difficult times, but I've come through. Life is, for me, an adventure. Has been. And here at this point in life, when I could easily just do very little but retire, I've taken on this daily radio program. And there's a reason, because I look at the world around me. If you've listened to the radio show I did before, I used to do just a once-a-week program that aired on the weekends called Your Weekend Show. And we would hit topics about life, the experience that we share together. But there's something about this age in which we're living in right now, which is just so different and so unique to any time that I've ever seen before. When this year of 2020 started, how many people listening would have thought we'd be where we are today? The economy seemed relatively decent. No problem there in the United States. And the whole idea of a pandemic was just not even in the news. We got through Christmas. We got through New Year's. We're beginning the whole new year. And we know it's going to be a lot of rancor and noise, because here in the United States, of course, it's an election year, so that just goes with the territory. My wife and I had all kind of plans of things we were going to accomplish. There were some things that I really wanted to do on a personal level in terms of ministry that I just felt something needed to be done, but it never seemed that the door was opening. And I thought maybe this was the year a door was going to open to take care of a good prospect in developing a church here in the Northeast Georgia Mountains. I'm involved with one in Florida when I'm down there. My wife and I, we're kind of semi-retired, so we divide our time between our little house up in the mountains of Georgia and down in Florida. And it allows me to have two bases of operation for ministry. And besides, I do enjoy our little place in the mountains, the peace and the quiet. Everything changed on a dime. I mean, it really did earlier this year. All my plans of people that I wanted to visit up in Georgia and into Virginia, maybe over toward Tennessee, an easy drive from where we live here in the mountains. And I really believe that was going to be my spring and summer. Maybe even getting together a core group to begin a small congregation. Those plans changed on a dime. We were still down in Florida when we first started hearing the word pandemic. You remember? We first started hearing about something in China, in Wuhan. And we didn't know what it really meant. There were so many conflicting stories. Let's be honest. You know, a lot of people trying to play the blame game now. We're very forgetful sometimes. Let's go back in time. Who knew what and when? The WHO, the WHO, World Health Organization, is telling the world not to worry. Nothing to see here. Yet we had some information saying it may not be as it appears. Of course, China's saying it's all under control. Nothing to worry about here. But in January, end of January, we started limiting travel from China. And a lot of people in the United States got really up in arms about that. You cannot do that. That's not nice. That's being xenophobic was the word tossed around. How quickly we forget. In early February, I got a telephone call from a good friend of mine who I'd worked with for a number of years in emergency management. I'll tell you the story about how I got that job and how I moved into emergency managing, you know, management work. It was totally I didn't apply for it. It kind of found me because of my media background primarily. But I kind of fell into it at a very unique time in my life, and I learned planning. I understood how to deal with the public and media and help in planning and you know, preparing and mitigating when you have some kind of a disaster. So my friend gave me a call one night in February and said, you know, with what they're saying and some of the things that are beginning to circulate in emergency management, we may have a real problem on our hands in the next month or two. And he wanted to know if I would come out of retirement for a while and head up to where he was at in North Carolina. And I said, yes, I would, if it's really that serious. And he thought it was going to be very serious. Now, remember the time frame. This is in February. We're just beginning to hear about the coronavirus. I don't think anybody really has been infected or died yet that we knew of in this country. And so I agreed to go up there if he needed me. And about a week and a half later, the phone call came, and there I was on my way to North Carolina from Florida, not knowing what the world was about to bring. I mean, I remember driving up, you know, there was the beginning of social distancing when you got into a hotel, and a lot of the restaurants had shut down their dining rooms and doing takeout and drive-through only. These are just the beginning stages of the unknown. And I arrived and, you know, checked into my hotel where I lived for the next couple of months. As we watch the world change before our very eyes rapidly. I can remember and understand when people say that we didn't know, or there's a lot we know. I'm going to address in just a moment. Matter of fact, I'm going to stop right now. A lot of people say, well, if he knew, and why didn't he tell us, and this and that, and, you know, people in authority. Believe me, we knew, and we're all debating how do we inform and prepare the public. We're not sure about anything. Let's be honest. We have a lack of assurance on some of the information. Do we panic everybody when we're not prepared to deal with it? Whether at the federal or state level, in most areas, and even at a county level, we're all working off the same data, all trying to make our preparations, all looking at the worst case scenario for our region, as predicted. And that's all the information we had to go on back in early March. And so we were told in our county of just shy of 300,000 people to expect around 3,000 people would die from this virus. That's what we were told. This was the prediction made by the experts from the Imperial College in London. And watching the sudden rise in cases in places like Italy and the UK and others locations, with what we knew then, that was the best information. So we all knew that we were going to be coming into this, what they called the pause. Everybody had a different name for it, but it was pretty much going to start right about the same time in March, where for the next 2 weeks, maybe a little longer, kind of assess it for 2 weeks. Remember this? For 2 weeks, we're going to slow things down. We're going to shut down all non-essential businesses and limit the number of people in stores. We're going to shut down any restaurants. You know, you saw it all happen. Everybody was going to shut down for 2 weeks. And knowing that this was going to be an economic hardship, well, we're going to send you some money, $1,200 per person in a household. Or I think husband and wife would get $2,400 or something like that. And this will kind of soften the blow for these 2 weeks where only the most essential of essential are going to be going to work. Everything else is shut down, including churches, you name it. It had to shut down. And we were told if we just did that, we could flatten the curve. Flatten the curve. Now, what does flatten the curve actually mean in English? It truly meant that the same number of people will probably end up being infected, and most of which that would die will die, but just over a much longer period of time, instead of in a matter of weeks on a sharp rise up and drop, where we would overwhelm the hospital system, overwhelm our capacity to deal with things. And even in our case, we had to figure out how are we going to deal with that number of people dying in a pandemic situation. Trust me, a lot of work was being done behind the scenes that most people don't know about at all levels of government. I'm just telling you, if you think that nobody was doing anything, you're totally wrong. We just didn't run out there and say, well, we think 3,000 people are going to die in our county, but we don't know what we're going to do yet. How do you think that's going to help anything? It's not. We were not in a point yet, of critical spread or community spread. We hadn't gotten there yet. We're trying to already push the concept of washing hands, social distancing. Don't go out unless you have to. We're already beginning at that point as we're trying to get a handle at every level. And understand, this was going on pretty much across most of the United States. Now, there are a few places that didn't, but places that had a population base certainly were. And we're all working off the same information and data. And so we made our plans. I can remember looking at college campuses that taught nursing and literally working the deal out to use their nursing school And we had trucks, tractor trailer trucks coming in to set up these nursing schools to actually be a hospital situation for overflow. Working for days and weeks to get things ready as we started that pause. And also locating temporary morgue space using everything from refrigerated trucks to storage buildings. And yeah, it's morbid, but it's real. That's what was going on at the time. And so there we started with the pause. Now, I'm going to take a pause right here just for a moment if you're just tuned in, listening on radio. This is Truth to Ponder, and I'm your host, Bob Bierman. Today, I just decided to come into the studio and just share from my heart whatever came to my mind. And I knew that I wanted to start, as I did in the first part of the program, looking at how we have changed in just my lifetime of 65 years, from the mid-50s to here we are, the year 2020. Let's just take 1950 to 2020. That's 70 years. How much the world has changed. How much our attitudes have changed. How much our morals have changed. And in spite of our great technology, how little the human condition has actually changed at most levels. So the pandemic started. And I realized as I got into the month, end of March and into April, doing my job, that the numbers we were being told would happen were just simply not happening. And a lot of the information being put out by the television networks was just mostly scary headlines that just were not following through with the millions that are supposed to die in the United States. It just didn't seem to be happening like it was supposed to by the time we got to the end of May and into June. And so I decided at that point, I'm going to back off a little bit. And I headed from North Carolina to our place in Georgia, spent a week just in case things changed. Then I proceeded down to Florida, grabbed my wife, and we came back up here just in case things were to change. I felt it would be a better place for my wife to be here up in the mountains than down in a more crowded community in Florida. She would be considered one that has a couple of risk factors, asthma being one. And I figured being up in these mountains would be a much safer environment for her, especially if I got called and had to go back to North Carolina. It would be about a two-hour trip. And so that's what I did. The numbers never came in. Today we're seeing a lot of infections. And I'm going to share with you my thoughts on that. In the United States, we're being told by some people we did a lousy job. Hard to say. If you discount and take out New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and how they responded, the U.S. numbers actually are some of the lowest deaths per 100,000 in the world. And even with New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, it still runs around middle of the pack. I agree it's more difficult when you have a crowded situation like metropolitan New York, northern New Jersey. Still not sure about Connecticut, how that happened. But I look back now, there were a lot of mistakes made, a lot of finger pointing now. I can remember, you remember Dr. Fauci was talking about, do we need to wear a mask? And he said back then we didn't. How many of you remember when he said we do not need to wear a mask?
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You're sure of it? Because people are listening closely to this.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. And often there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face.
And can you get some schmutz sort of staying inside there?
Of course. But when you think masks, you should think of healthcare providers needing them, and people who are ill.
I just wanted to share that to show you that over time, and this is just one of numerous examples, how the goalposts have been moved, how things have been changing, how 2 weeks became a month and 2 months, and now what are we, 6 months, heading toward seven, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, 7 months in, heading into 8 months next month of pausing and shutdowns, people unemployed. There are several things that we need to think about for a moment before we just take the politics out of it for the love of an almighty God. Take the politics out for just a moment and use your brain for wisdom, not policy. There's only so much we can do in this world to stop a virus. Wearing a face covering is not necessarily one of them, but it certainly makes us feel like we're accomplishing something. Most people that I see wearing a mask are getting a false sense of security and making other mistakes that make them equally as vulnerable to a virus. You're seeing people that supposedly wear them, hang around only those that wear them, and they're still getting infected. Now, here's where I want to stop for just a moment. What is the survival rate of this virus if you're between the ages of 0 to 19? The odds of anything happening to you are like 1 in like 10,000 or more. Even when you become in your 30s and 40s, not much different. Even my age bracket, surprisingly well. The CDC finally admitted a couple of weeks ago something that a lot of people do not want to acknowledge, especially depending on your politics. And I want to define a few things, because once again, it was my job to learn, study, and be prepared and understand what's going on in my world around me. I didn't have time for politics when people's lives and livelihoods were at stake. Frankly, I didn't care about politics when I did my work. I cared mostly about how do we do all that we can reasonably do to help people get through this. And now it's been turned into a political weapon, which to me is just despicable and disgusting. The claim of 200 and some odd thousand people have died due to the coronavirus is only partly true. The CDC admits that 94% of those that had it had other very serious underlying health issues. I was made aware of a gentleman in another state who probably is 40-ish that died of this, but he also weighed over 500 pounds. And his heart could have given out just as easily with or without the virus in a short amount of time if something wasn't done. The average age is somebody in their 80s, and once again, on average 2 to 2.6 other life-threatening illnesses. People in hospice care that somehow were exposed are counted as a corona death. So the numbers are artificially high. The actual people that are considered dying from the virus is only about 6% of that 200,000 number, or 12,000. When it comes to school-aged children, let's be real. Let's be honest and real about this. More children are at risk from dying of seasonal flu than the coronavirus, period, by a factor of 4 to 1. Yet we're not shutting the schools down. Maybe now we're going to shut everything down. And I fear if we're not careful, we're going to be allowing this pandemic to control too much of our daily lives. What do you think? As I said, the whole purpose of this new radio program is to try to share some information that is factually accurate and not politically motivated. I have bought guests on this program, some you'll be hearing a lot of in the days and weeks ahead. There is so much happening and people being played on their fear with this virus. I mean, I'm not trying to be some kind of conspiracy theorist freak, but let's be honest. When it's okay to scream and protest in the streets, but singing psalms or hymns will put you in jail, if it's okay to be jumping and screaming at people in their face, and somebody sitting at a football game watching her son about 20 feet away from anybody is tased and arrested for wearing a mask, you have to wonder, why are some things acceptable and other things not? Why is it people can get into an airliner now? And you know how tightly fit you are in coach. You got somebody on your left and your right if you're in the middle seat. You're in a tube flying at 35,000 feet for 2 hours, and the only thing protecting you from somebody that may be infected, well, is just a face mask? I think not. Yet we can't go to church because that's where people get sick. We have a lot to dissect over the days and weeks ahead. And I hope that you'll stay listening to this program as we try to bring you some real truth and facts to ponder.
This has been Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman. To find out more, visit our website, truth2ponder.com. That's truth2ponder.com. Truth to Ponder, shining the light of truth in a darkening world.